Bulletproof Radio, a state of high performance.
You're listening to Bulletproof Radio with Dave Asprey.
Quick question for you. What makes you feel more invigorated, less stressed, and more in control of your body? The answer, more energy. Specifically, more quantum energy, because our bodies are quantum systems. Leela Quantum Tech has figured out a way to harness quantum energy so you can reach a state of vibrancy that you've probably never felt. Dozens of studies show that Leela Q's products neutralize the effects of harmful EMFs around us and even release positive energy that can improve your blood flow, optimize your heart rate, and other benefits. Leela Q has some heavy science backing it up. A recent study looked at people who use Leela Q for just 10 minutes. The study used a special blood illumination technique called dark field microscopy, and it showed significant protective and improvement effects on blood flow. So take a quantum leap into higher vibration at LeelaQ.com/Dave and claim your exclusive 10% discount.
Hey there, ice bath lovers. Do you want to take your cold exposure game up a notch with some contrast therapy? Well, you should, because cold plunges and contrast therapy can lower stress, up your immunity, and even help you sleep better. It works better than just cold therapy alone. Well, now you can do that with the new Michael Phelps Chili Goat Cold Tubs by Master Spas. Whether you want to relax in a hot soak or get energized with a cold plunge, the Michael Phelps Chili Goat Cold Tub has you covered. You can easily hop out of the hot water, get in the cold water, and go back and forth. When you do that, you get better results in less time, and that's what biohacking is all about. Go to chiligoattubs.com, use promo code DAVE500, and you can save $500 on any Chili Goat Cold Tub. I have one in my backyard. That's chiligoattubs.com, promo code DAVE500.
Today's cool fact of the day is that the bacteria in your mother's colon at the time of your birth affects the smell of your gas for the rest of your life. A baby, including you, was born with a sterile intestinal tract, and during delivery, there's a ton of fluid and other things that carry bacteria from the mother to the baby. And scientists believe that this is the time when the baby's colon is populated by the mother's colon bacteria. As a result, yes, it's true. You actually do have gas like your mother.
Everyone's talking about red light therapy beds, and for good reason. There's a company called ARRC LED that's building an entirely new class of LED devices. ARRC LED beds integrate proprietary scanning technology and frequency protocols to shape the delivery of six different wavelengths in dose-optimized photobiomodulation. Yes, that's a lot of words. What it is, though, is that photobiomodulation improves the underlying energetics of the cells in your body. And those changes can benefit nearly every tissue and organ and system in your body. You change your cells and you change your life. For more information, visit arrcled.com.
Welcome back to Bulletproof Executive Radio. I'm Dave Asprey, your host. And first, before we get started on the interview today, a word of thanks. Thank you for making us the number one ranked podcast out there. If you haven't already done it, please go to iTunes and click like. I just woke up, and last night I went to sleep on the new Bulletproof sleep induction mat, and I'm feeling strangely just fully energized this morning. Just had my Bulletproof coffee, so I'm feeling awesome. If you haven't had a chance to check out the sleep induction mat, it does interesting things to your body. You just lay down on it for a few minutes, and it increases your endorphin levels through acupressure points, and it feels awesome. So check that out. In the meantime, sitting here in the studio across the internet from me is BJ Baker, who is a certified athletic trainer and sports rehab specialist who spent 30 years working with pro athletes from just about every kind of sport you can think of. He's with Pure Performance Training and here to share some thoughts about recovery with us today. BJ, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Dave. It's great to be here with you.
So how did you get to spend 30 years working with pro athletes? Like, what kind of education do you get, or how does this all work? Like, that's kind of a big number.
I get that question a lot, especially from students. And interns that I'm fortunate enough to mentor, but I've been really blessed. You know, I simple existence in upstate New York in the Finger Lakes, grew up in a small town, like a lot of young athletes, you know, play football, play basketball in the winter, play baseball in the spring, think you're a little better than you are, want to play at the college level, really, you know, and a lot of people forget back then that there was no internet, right? So it was kind of the Wild West of information for strength conditioning information or power, you know, power production or plyometrics. That stuff was in its infancy, and you couldn't just go to the internet to look for it. We had to rely on Muscle and Fitness and USA Powerlifting magazines, and right? So living in a small town, you know, the captains of the football team got all their stuff together in a trailer, and we trained together. And I was kind of the cerebral one who would always kind of try to ferret out what was the best progression, how would we not beat ourselves up. Even back then, I was trying to figure out how we could push the envelope physiologically, but be freshest on game day. And that kind of led me to, you know, of course, when you're an athlete, you get hurt a couple times. You go to see the local physical therapist, and we're fortunate enough to be where I grew up, about 20 miles from Ithaca College and Cornell University. So we would go over there and use their sports medicine staff. And I got to know their athletic trainers, and I got to know their orthopedic surgeons. And I was really fascinated by this whole sports medicine concept, to be an athletic trainer where you're kind of the team's first responder, where you're the guy, and we see them on our, you know, our NFL game where someone goes down, the guy that goes out there with the team physician is an athletic trainer, and you're nationally certified. You have to go and do an undergraduate program and take a national test, and you're qualified to go out there and assess injuries, to stabilize neck and spine injuries. They serve a real important purpose now in high schools because of all the heat, prostration and heat stroke issues that we're having. And of course, with all the concussion issues now too, they're your frontline baseline information, and they're the basically the ones that take care of our kids in school. So I was really interested in kind of pursuing this, you know, athletic training curriculum.
You ended up getting to the kind of the top of your game. I mean, you were with the Boston Red Sox, New England Blazers, Cornell, Harvard. Like, you've kind of done top-level collegiate and top-level pro stuff. What made what you were doing different than what everyone else was doing? Like how did you end up spending so much time at the very highest levels of your professional? Because it's kind of cool. I mean, these guys are the guys who are, you know, the Formula One racers of human beings, and you're right out there fixing them up. Like what made your approach different than what everyone else does when you go to a physical therapist or something?
A really well-balanced education with awesome opportunity. So I went to a small university in upstate New York called Cortland State. They're known, had one of the first athletic training programs in the country, was one of the first undergraduate programs in the country to offer things like anatomical basis of movement, kinesiology, biomechanics. So really got turned on to the science there. Had great relationships with my doctors, was very fortunate to get an opportunity to get a graduate assistantship at Cornell. And that graduate assistantship was the best of both worlds because I got to work in a Division I athletic setting, do rounds with great orthopedic surgeons, but I also did my master's work at Ithaca College, which probably a lot of people don't know, but is an excellent research-based university that at that time put out more research, exercise physiology research, than any other school its size in the country. So I really got to appreciate how to do research, how to read literature, how to read the research and understand it. So it all paid off, did well in both settings, interviewed at Harvard, and got to go to Cambridge, Massachusetts, you know, small town guy from upstate New York. And it was just an awesome experience. 7 years there, I'm plugged into the Boston scene. The athletic trainer I worked for at the time, Bill Coughlin, here I am, a newbie right out of grad school, put me on the Gatorade research board as a representative from the university, got to ask a lot of questions, got exposed to the science a little bit more. And the thing that really kind of rocketed my career towards strength and conditioning a little bit more and away from the athletic training was when I got to Harvard. Here's the largest athletic department in the country. They had, at that time, I think they had 45 intercollegiate sports there. No designated strength conditioning facility.
Wow.
So as a sports medicine person, I'm like, if you want to keep these guys off the, on the field, you need to, you know, develop strength. You need to encourage proper mobility. We got to get them working out. At that time, I took the responsibility. We built the first intercollegiate strength conditioning facility there. We converted an old building, 6,000 square foot, state of the art. I hired the first strength coach. So it was kind of my baby. And I also developed a good friendship with Mike Boyle, who's become kind of a legend in strength conditioning and functional training. His website, I always refer my students to his website. He does a great job there, strengthcoach.com. And it's just what we're all about, developing strength and power with a good foundation of movement. So I get this expertise, I get this experience, and I was fortunate enough to have the Red Sox come calling. So now, of course, I'm at a crossroads. My wife is 8 months pregnant with our first child. Oh, wow. I'm totally happy at Harvard. You know, I'm very content. I've got a great setting. I'm stimulated intellectually. I'm in the strength conditioning world. And they offer me the job. So obviously I had to have the blessing of my wife because I was away pretty much half the time. But we agreed that it was an opportunity that I couldn't turn down. I had no idea what a challenge it would be. And we'll talk a little bit about the challenges of professional sports. But it gave me an opportunity to kind of step out of my comfort zone. I'd been an athletic trainer working with a team for my whole career, even though my master's degree was in exercise physiology and strength training, even though the strength and conditioning facility was my baby at Harvard. I was not really comfortable. I almost didn't take the job because they wanted me to be the first strength conditioning coordinator for the Red Sox. And it was a big deal. Dan Duquette took the job there. He had a history of working closely with strength and conditioning. We had lost one of our star players, Ellis Burks, to a bizarre squatting accident across the street at Gold's Gym. So
bizarre squatting accidents.
Bizarre squatting accident. Yeah. So, you know, In his wisdom, he wanted to keep everything in-house, and he wanted to hire somebody who was qualified, and that I was going to be that guy. And I almost didn't take the job, and then I got some very wise advice from Ed Lassert, who's still actually the trainer at the Boston Celtics today. And Ed said, listen, you're going to be in the big leagues. You've got good interpersonal skills. You're going to make a difference there. People are going to love having you. You know, don't hesitate for a moment. Go for it. And I did, and it was a great 8 years of working with, as you referred to earlier, some of the best athletes at what they do.
So what made you turn it all in? Your current approach is you'll work with anyone off the street pretty much, right? So you're taking these like Formula One things. It's kind of like having race car mechanics work on, you know, your Toyota Camry. what do people get if they come and they work with someone with just your depth and level of experience? I mean, do you get bored? You're like, oh, look, okay, you need to lose like 30 pounds and maybe you should like walk at lunch or something. Like what level of human being comes to you? Because, I mean, you've been spoiled. You only work with like guys who are motivated and make lots of money, hopefully, as pro athletes. Like what's the difference?
Well, the difference is that you have to really be patient. And it's a whole different kind of animal. It's like you said, you've got super motivated, well, and not in all cases, but for the most part, super motivated athletes at the Major League Baseball level. But I think that what really resonates with me is when I made the transition from baseball back into the clinical setting, where I basically work at a health facility, I do manual therapy part of the day, I coach and train athletes the other part of the day. So now I get to work with younger kids. And just understanding how we are at a movement crisis in this country. And you talk a lot about posture and ergonomics and how to sit in the office and all the problems that we incur when we sit for too long a period of time. As Chris Kresser's pointed out and you've pointed out many times, we know from the research that sitting 6 or 8 hours a day can undo a nice 1 or 2 hour workout. It's a bad deal. So the kids, you'd be shocked. We evaluate kids as young as 8, 9, 10 years old. They can literally not squat. They cannot get down into a squat position.
Does that have something to do with those ridiculous, like hard plastic chairs where they're welded to the desk and you have to like sit in these little, like it's like cubicle training or something for kids that they have in schools?
It's not good for them, that's for sure. But basically the hip flexors shorten up and you get all kinds of movement restrictions. And that's really why we go about things the way we do here. Everything is well, we'd like to say at least evidence-led, but evidence-based. Right. Sometimes it's a little frustrating waiting for the research to come out. So it's evidence-led. But when we pull in our athletes, whether it's a 40-year-old CEO of a company or a 10-year-old that wants to play Little League Baseball or a 16-year-old who wants to get ready for college or whatever it happens to be, we have an evidence-based progression that we evaluate people with. And the first thing that they do coming through the door is a functional movement screen, which is basically a test that's been set up by a famous physical therapist in functional training. His name's Gray Cook. He has his own website. Yeah. And he does a great job of helping you quantify, you know, what is missing in those seven primary movements.
For people listening, and there's a lot of people driving right now, usually about 50,000 people the first week will hear what we're saying. I have flown around the world literally and recommended functional movement screens to some of the top investment bankers and hedge fund traders around the world. Over the last year and a half, I've flown around talking about how do you upgrade yourself to people who are in a position to upgrade themselves. And these guys, none of them have heard of functional movement training, but the few of them who look at that and go, this is great, and they find a guy in London or they find a guy in, you know, anywhere on the planet that can do that kind of work, they're all super, super satisfied. And these are guys who are in desks all the time. They might ride their bike home from work or something, but for the most part, they're sedentary. And the stuff you're talking about, their functional movement, Gray's work, it transforms office people maybe more so than pro athletes.
Yes. I mean, the impact is dramatic. Like I said, people are shocked when you take them through that they're unable to do fairly simple movements that don't require a lot of strength. They're missing stability and they're missing mobility in their joints. And they've literally lost this from sitting for long periods of time. And once they regain that, now I think the stats say something like you're 85% more likely to be injured while training or playing a sport if you're asymmetrical or you have a major movement pattern out. So this helps solve that problem. And think about it. We want people to come to us and train to get strong, fit, healthy. Nutrition's a big part of what we do here as well. That's actually the foundation for everything, and we'll talk about that, I'm sure, in a little bit. But we have done very well because of the CrossFit phase sensation now. Because as we've discussed before and you've discussed with other guests here, some of the boxes are very aggressive. They do way too much volume. They get hurt. They come see us. We rehab them. Then they also see what we're doing in here as far as our conditioning and our strength programs. And they say, that looks really similar to what CrossFit does. And I said, yes, it is very similar. We train first responders here. We prepare guys for the military. We have college athletes and pro athletes. And they said, so what's the difference between you and CrossFit? And I said, well, I like to think that we put a little more emphasis on our progression and our on-ramp, bringing the person who really is dysfunctional, really has some movement issues, which I would argue is probably any office worker in the country or truck driver or person that has a significant commute. And we bring them in, we evaluate them, lights go on when they say, I literally cannot squat. And I said, yeah, you know, in third world countries, people hang out around the fire in an ass to grass squat position for hours without moving. And you can't basically go to a parallel squat without falling over. So they know immediately there's a concern there. And then if they think that they can also achieve, become very, very fit efficiently, not working, you know, 2-hour workouts, literally working 3 to 4 hours a week with the right focus on the right movements and the right exercises, they're ecstatic. And, you know, once we get people in the door, very few people leave.
I believe it. In fact, I gave a talk at a large CrossFit event in Miami about a week ago. So I was talking about nutrition and recovery for CrossFit. But it's interesting. I think CrossFit is here to stay. You know, it's a growing movement. There's lots of people who are into it. I have some concerns just that people don't get to recover enough right, when they're doing it, because I know that if I did a CrossFit level of intensity every single day, especially with the amount of time that I sleep and my work schedule, I would probably break. So there were girls there who could clearly like wipe the floor with me. I'm like, you know, hats off to you. I wonder if there are things you can do as a functional movement coach to help people do a better job in CrossFit, not just form, but, you know, teaching them the on-ramp, but then letting them take that into the box and doing the things they do. Do you see that a lot with your, with your client base?
Yes. So for people that are curious about how do you get the most out of athletes, how do you get someone who's basically sedentary most of the day, super fit, super strong, be able to train at high levels, go and do crazy things, go skiing, you know, play hard on weekends. How do you get them there efficiently? And so what we do is we set them up on a program. We basically make sure that all their movement patterns are at least a 2 out of 3, you know, and if not, we're working on them. And then you introduce therapeutic exercise, okay? Fancy word, but basically just means exercises that are put in proximity of another exercise in your workout, so it complements it. It opens up a joint before you use it, or it, you know, it lengthens tissue after you've contracted it. But what it does is it allows you to use your rest interval and doing something active, which is one, better for recovery anyway, and two, very therapeutic, as the name kind of lends itself to suggest. So super density, super training density, you get a lot done in a short amount of time, and guess what? You don't have delayed onset muscle soreness as significant. Your movement patterns get better continually. And then we just continue to challenge you based on how fast you progress.
One of the things I hear from the executives that I coach is that they don't have time to go somewhere. They go out and they say, hey, I'm going to be in this country at this time. I have exactly 1 hour. If I drive to a gym, I drive to a specialist. So they want to do stuff over Skype, or they want a program they can do at home. With the style of functional movement you do, I mean, can you do an assessment remotely? Can you do an assessment in person and then give them exercises and say, come back in 2 months? Or is this the sort of thing they really need to drive there and physically be there with you?
We've talked about having a Skype model, and I don't think it's impossible. There's a challenge because there are certain implements that you use, a 2x6, and there's a hurdle step where you've got a little apparatus that if you buy the kit, it's easier to execute, but people make them at home. So it's not impossible, but I would say it would be easy enough to do a variation of that and then to do coaching over Skype. Of course, we have clients here that drive from Western Mass, from New Hampshire, from Rhode Island, fly in from Philadelphia, New York. They'll come in. They'll book 2 or 3 sessions or do a couple days, get their homework, come back in a month or two.
That seems so much more preferable. I've done some Skype remote work where, you know, I'm the client, and I like, it's kind of funny, especially for me, but my hip flexors, especially my right one, weren't working so well. And because of the work I'm doing writing for the Bulletproof Executive, like I'm often, at least I was sitting down, you know, 14 hours a day, more than I used to. And I'd taken that out of some of the just movement things that I used to do, just being busy. So I moved to a standing desk. It's kind of cool. I've got, you know, a motorized one, so I can, you know, raise it up and down to various heights. So I'm moving around, and it's transformed a lot of what I do. But in order to figure out that those things were shut down, I actually did it over Skype with my buddy Kai at EgoSQ down in L.A., which is, you know, not quite a functional movement system, but very related to the sort of things you do. But when I saw them in person, there were some more things that came out. So I'd say if you're listening to this and you want to do this kind of movement upgrade, which is one of the top 6 biohacks I recommend, you should go see someone like BJ. Like, fly there, drive there, find a guy in your community, whatever it is, and look eye to eye. Let him look at the micro way you move. And BJ, if someone like me walked in the door, I'm guessing within like 5 seconds, you'd spot all sorts of weird stuff, right? Just in the way I walk. Right. So you have matrix vision. Like everyone else just sees some guy walking in, and you like see every little angle moving in my joints, and you can tell that the right side is weaker than the left. Am I right? I'm just guessing.
Yeah, it's a career hazard. My wife is always, we'll be driving down the street and somebody will be running, and I'll be like, oh man, that valgus force on her knee is killing me. I can't believe that leg whip she has. Oh, she needs to see it, you know, and she'll just roll her eyes and just, you know, save it kind of thing. But you make a good point. I would encourage people, regardless of who you choose, find somebody who's well-versed on functional movement screen. They have certifications, actually. I think you can even find people who are certified to do it going on the website.
MoveNat stuff, yeah?
Well, it's actually functionalmovement.com.
Okay, cool.
Is the FMS site. And when you come and see a practitioner like myself, you know, that's just one tool that we use. That's one evaluation. So I do a pretty thorough orthopedic assessment for a range of motion, mobility, stability type stuff. And then there's whole other schools that we follow and believe in. There's the PRI, the Postural Restoration Institute, has some great stuff on hip alignment and breathing techniques. And then there's DNS, which is basically based on the Prague School of Thought, which is all about, they're very similar, you know, but it's basically anatomically we tend to do certain things, and we know that if we evaluate someone and when we see what their tendencies are, that we can prescribe therapeutic exercises to really help them. And then, of course, there's the soft tissue work. So we do a lot of instrument-assisted soft tissue here, Graston techniques, fascial scraping, Chinese cupping, and that stuff. Even a couple treatments sometimes will open people up, make them feel like they've never felt before, and now you start to systematically apply therapeutic exercise on top of that range that you've gained with the tissue, and you give them little myofascial tweaks, self-myofascial tweaks they can do on a foam roller, lacrosse ball, therapeutic stick. See, they take all that home with them, and now it becomes homework, and they just thrive.
All right, BJ, you've convinced me. Next time I'm in Boston, I'm going to look you up because you said Chinese cupping, myofascial scraping. I mean, how could I say no to that? So next time I'm there, we're going to spend a couple hours making me cry, which is good. I'm actually really excited because you're doing cross-discipline work, which it seems to me in the type of performance work that I do, if you stick to only one discipline, you tend to just miss out on so much. And I see this in medicine. I see this in business and everything else. You know, you need to pick and choose the techniques that work without too much dogma. And it sounds like you're clearly focused on movement, but you're going very cross-discipline. And also, you're way into nutrition. So let's talk about why nutrition became a part of your training system, even though your background is more on the movement side. You know, strength and conditioning involves food. When did you make the transition from it's about the movement to it's about the movement plus the food?
Well, it was interesting because my colleagues were actually ahead of me on this a little bit. I have consulted sports nutrition with people since 1986, and I've always thought I was on the cutting edge of everything, you know, and I've had great success working with people. And one of my colleagues, Mike, came up to me and said, you know, you really got to look into this paleo diet. And to me, it just sounded like a tagline, you know, and he kind of explained it to me, and I go, oh, yeah, yeah, and I kind of put him on the back burner. And I think, you know, I believe things happen for a reason. So I think 2 days later, Rob Wolf was on the Strength Coach podcast, and I listened to him, and it just, that was an epiphany for me. Lights on. I said, that makes absolute total sense. Yep. What we should eat, what we are made to eat, have a nutrient-dense, low-inflammation diet, low-toxin, sustainable. I mean, it all made sense. I'm like, there was this intuition that it couldn't be wrong.
Right.
But then, of course, I did due diligence, and I went on the internet, and I read, and I tried to basically disprove paleo to myself. You know, I'll tell you what.
The Dunkin' Donuts approach to disproving paleo didn't work.
Right. So what I ended up doing was I did it. For 30 days. Yeah. I did it for 30 days. I did it strict. And when I tell you that my body hadn't changed in probably close to 20 years, I was carrying the same amount of muscle. I've always been lean. I've never considered myself to have a problem in those areas at all. I never really paid much attention to my lipids and my blood work because I never had any problems. Right. But I heard all the things that Rob said. And what I did is I did that for 30 days. I lost 10 pounds. My abs came back, my face leaned out, my workouts got better, my sleep got better. I mean, all the things that we hear your guests talk about, right? But until that happens to you, you just don't understand the power of just experiencing that. And I said, this stuff works. And when people say the only real way to prove it is to do 30 to 60 days and see what it does for you, And I will tell you, I've done this with scores of people here. It's changed people's lives. I've got some unbelievable stories, if you want me to share them with you, that are really powerful. But I don't know that anybody that has chose to be disciplined enough to basically follow the guidelines that hasn't been life-changing for them, you know? And what's really frustrating is that it's very hard when you're in a referral-based network like we are to find Western medicine doctors that will get on board with you on it.
I actually started listing them on the website, so Bulletproof Physicians. There's a surprising number of doctors now who are carrying like Bulletproof coffee and brain octane oil and glutathione and things in their practice because they're like, well, patients like it and it benefits, like they're getting the outcomes I want. And they're recommending this kind of a diet, you know, whether it's paleo or Bulletproof. There are some differences between them. But one of the things that stands out in both of those approaches is that when you have the idea that you have to change one variable at a time, a lot of times nothing happens. Because if you have 15 things that are smacking over the head, well, now I have 14, nothing happens. So you experienced it, and you're going to share some stories from some of your clients. I'm just thinking from a movement perspective, is it the same deal? Like you can't just change one thing, you need to change the things that are lined up, all of the things at once, or at least most of them?
Well, literally, there's an algorithm. So the FMS system, right, it's set up so that, you know, there are priorities. Thoracic spine's really important. Pelvic position, hamstring length, core strength. But the screen is set up in such a way that you know if you don't do well on the leg raise, that you have to work and address that first. Or if your thoracic spine is asymmetrical, then we're going to take a look at that first, and then we're going to look at your leg raise. And you're going to take the worst movement. So if you have a 1 or a 2 in that scale of 3, you're going to take the lowest one, you're going to knock that down. And it's interesting the way the body's wired. Like, I'm a big believer in primal patterns. So if people have movement patterns that are out, we know if you go and start to bear crawl, if you start to do simple rolling progressions, if you start to do something as grounded as closed chain as like a kettlebell swing, and then you go back and you retest, a lot of those movements are restored. So a lot of times just moving properly in a primal pattern, and I think that's why MoveNat is having so much success, because not only are you outdoors and having fun, but it's actually healing people and getting people stronger and addressing a whole bunch of different things all at once.
Well, you can't use the H word. If you say heal, that means it's some sort of medical thing, and you have to have like 50,000 licenses and a whole bunch of insurance, and it's HIPAA compliant. So now MoveNat doesn't heal anyone. It just makes them feel really good. Come on, man. We don't want regulation here.
It makes them feel better.
I'm just kidding. Makes them feel better. By the way, I love doctors. I'm happy we have medical regulation. I also like it when people can say, my stuff heals you even if I'm not a doctor, but hey, maybe sorry.
Right. Yeah, maybe.
So let's go back to the story side of things. So you have like a couple examples from people who totally rocked it when they combined the food approach with the movement approach that you work with. So like how fast does it work? What happens to people?
Well, I think probably the best example that I have of the potential, and this has happened a couple times with us with different clients. So let's take our client. And we'll call him Bill. So Bill comes to us, and he's basically referred by his physician because he's on statins, he's on blood pressure medication, he's 40 pounds overweight, and he has atrocious posture. He lost 2 inches in his height since college because he's so kyphotic. So we bring him in, we do our thing, and guess what? After about a year of actually less than a year, I think it was only like eight months, after just doing work on his movement, addressing his posture, his ergonomics, getting up from a desk, doing things periodically throughout the day, addressing his tissue length, and all very simple stuff, not time intensive in any way, shape, or form, modified his diet. Of course, I don't even think that we did an aggressive 30-day with him. We just cleaned his diet up a little bit and took a lot of the inflammatory foods out of there.
What, gluten and margarine, I'm guessing, were the first two?
Yeah. Okay. Yep, oils. Yep. Yeah. So within that 8 months, off statins, off blood pressure medication, lost 40 pounds, gained an inch and a half back in his height. And people say, wow. Well, how does that happen? I said, well, you become aware of your posture. You improve your core strength, right? Now you reestablish tissue length and you incorporate strength. You know, you're going to actually literally regain some of that compression and that kyphotic head forward position that you developed because of bad habits for the last 20 years. So we don't guarantee results like that, but I would argue that they are typical if people really adopt the program and take their eating and their nutrition seriously.
So that works for we'll call them non-athletes, you know, people who are high performers, but not necessarily on track and field or on the court. What about the pro athletes when they do this kind of stuff? I mean, I know the LA Lakers just kind of came out of the closet like, oh, look, we're eating organ meats, drinking bulletproof coffee, et cetera, et cetera. In fact, I'm going to have Kate Shanahan on the show pretty soon, the physician they were working with.
Yeah.
So in your experience, that's one level of increasing performance for these guys. But a lot of them have been accused of doping and other things like that. Like how prevalent do you think it is? And I know that none of if you were working with someone who was doping, you wouldn't know they were. That's not your game at all. But how prevalent do you think this is in pro sports?
Well, I've been away now, you know, for almost 10 years. So it's hard for me to have perspective currently. And I think I always tend to be a little naive. Like I give the athletes credit, right, from the hard work. And,
I do too.
You know, I'm a little naive. Some of my colleagues in the industry laugh at me because they think I'm naive. But did you see the 60 Minutes interview with the guy who was supplying Alex Rodriguez?
Yeah, I did. I think he was on the Joe Rogan show the day after I was on. It's right on the edge of my brain.
Know, I can't think.
Especially with a V, right?
Yeah. And the things that he's saying about these gummies, these testosterone gummies that they take and the timing and knowing how fast it clears from the system and they've got it down to a science and he was tested X number of times and, you know, didn't come up positive. And I was like, wow, okay, I guess the science is staying ahead of the testing, which I think most people believe, right, that the science stays ahead of the masking science stays ahead of the testing science.
It's funny. In pro sports, I suspect that'll always be the case. And I kind of wish that they would just say, all right, here's the limits of what you're allowed to do, but you have to tell everyone what you're doing. Because in Formula One racing, things like seatbelts and all the other safety innovations that are in your car today end up happening at the very highest elite levels of performance. But because it's something that can trickle down, I feel like there's probably all sorts of stuff, you know, like the clear or whatever else it is, that probably would benefit 50-year-old people greatly that remains hidden. And that's one of the reasons, like, I'm very open. Yes, I use testosterone. I've used it since I was 30. I was obese, and my natural testosterone levels are either low or below low normal most of the time. In fact, always. They have been, and even though I can raise them somewhat with nutrition, I don't raise them enough. So I take, you know, bioidentical hormones, and I'm, like, super open about it. But I know there's a lot of people who still say, you know, I'm doping. Like you know, I'm a bad person. I'm seeing more guys who are just like, look, I'm getting older. I'd like to perform like I'm younger. I'm just going to do it. I'm not a listed athlete anywhere. But they still don't want to talk about it. There's something like, you know, oh, my testosterone turned to estrogen. I might be a girl. Do you see guys on, you know, do you see guys who come in or women who are on hormones who are making that a part of their kind of holistic approach to increasing their muscle mass, to functional movement, to having their brain turn on all the way? Or is this mostly just food and exercise, or maybe you just don't know?
Well, I don't know if it's happening because I address it from a food and exercise standpoint. I'm totally with you. I think because we have vilified androgens and performance-enhancing drugs, and it's just because I think we're very territorial. That's our sports. How dare you corrupt our sports? Yeah. Shame on you, and we're never going to forgive you for doing that. It causes a lot of problems, and I'm not going to deny that. And especially when a lot of the pro athletes that I used to talk to used to always say, you know, their concern isn't as much for themselves as that for their kids. They don't want their kids to have to make the same decisions or have those options on the table. It'd be nice if everybody just played clean and you didn't have to think about things like that. But medically and just thriving, I'm concerned that we don't look at the possibilities because we've vilified those androgens and the testosterone. Why shouldn't we be able to take a look at someone's testosterone level, monitor the liver enzymes, put them on so that they're productive, you know, they're stronger, they have more energy, right up until they're 80s, 90 years old. You know,
that's
ultimately we'd all like to just we'd all like to just live a great life and be fit and then just drop dead one day, right? No,
I'll tell you, when I'm 90, I will have the testosterone levels of a 30-year-old. There's no question about it because I smear the arm fist cream on my arms every day, and that's part of my anti-aging strategy. But I know that that's not as common. It's becoming more common, and I know. If I get sad that as athletes age, that they're not allowed to, even pro athletes, that they're not allowed to keep their levels where they should be, because I think we would see some pro athletes, you know, in their mid-40s who are still hitting it hard because they were able to hormonally manage their health, not to levels above normal. But like, why is it fair that a 20-year-old on the court who you're competing with when you're 30, why is it fair that they get to have more testosterone than you just because they're younger? Like, that just seems like a ripoff. But anyway, like you're saying, people don't always tell you about what they're doing there. But it's an interesting thing because I think some of your clients who are seeing anti-aging physicians at the same time they do work with you would see even more benefits from the type of things you do with nutrition and with these other things.
I don't want people to misunderstand what I'm saying either. I think we just limit some of the possibilities we have to just live a more productive, healthy life. I'm not suggesting that we should take them just for to play better in sports, perform better in sports. I'm worried about the big picture.
Healthy humans. It's about breaking down, not even just getting old. I'm not worried about getting old. I'm going to get old. I just don't want to get broken as I get old. Like anything that's going to help stop that, including functional movement, including, you know, eating lots of good quality fats, all of it, everything humanly possible, I'm going to do. All right, let's talk humanly possible. What about complicated machinery, electrical stimulation, lasers, ozone, all the kind of highly radical stuff? Did you ever play with that stuff? Do you see people doing it? Does it work? Like, what's your take on it?
We've used lasers a little bit in the physical therapy setting, cold lasers, and they do help healing. I have not had the opportunity to be on a lot of the cutting edge stuff like that. I was in the sports medicine realm, you know, basically from the mid 80s to 2000. And really there's a lot's happened in the last 10 years as far as people using hyperbaric chambers and for healing and using the BOD pods for body composition. And that stuff's all cool. One of my good friends, Ray Varelli, has been the trainer for the St. Louis Blues for I think over 20 years now. And they get to play with some really cool stuff. You know, it's all about getting the guys back quickly and healing. And so that's one of the reasons that I fell in love with your podcast, because you're very good about getting these guys that are on the cutting edge of all kinds of technologies. Yeah. All kinds of technologies. So some of it is a little strange, but almost always by the end of a podcast, you've got me convinced enough, or that guest has me convinced enough, that I'm going to research it further.
Well, BJ, thanks. I'm honored that you listen to the podcast. That says a lot, because you know you're at the top of your game. All right, couple more questions for you. Whole body vibration. You ever play around with that?
I have. In fact, I've used your unit.
Oh, you have? Do you have one?
One of my clients who has his own fitness center in his building that he provides for his employees basically just buys everything that we suggest. He's into it. He's totally into it.
Does he want to be interviewed? Because I'm looking for CEOs who do that. I do the same thing for my employees. They get all sorts of weird bulletproof things. Will you introduce us?
Yeah.
Okay. I'd want to talk to him.
I'd be happy to do that. He's a great guy, and he's really passionate about fitness and nutrition. And he bought one of your Vibe units. And I was like, geez, we really need to get something like that here. And he says, well, I'll bring it and leave it with you for the weekend. So we had it here, and I took a lot of my clients and my athletes on it. And, you know, we did all kinds of stuff, single leg squats and push-ups. And what I find interesting is one of his comments is he has a nagging shoulder injury that we try to stay on top of. And he's, you know, I did some foot elevated push-ups, the Vibe plate. He goes, my shoulder felt amazing after that. And I said, you know what, that perturbation, that vibration probably actually encourages your rotator cuff to turn on, keep the head of that humerus centered in the glenoid, and probably cuts down on impingement and any kind of, you know, dysfunction in there while you're doing your push-up. He goes, I don't know why it works, but it felt great, you know? So,
wow, that's
pretty cool.
That's so cool. Well, if you decide you want one, let me know. We'll hook you up. It's something that I do sometimes with push-ups. I have a ladder because there's like a loft here where I do my biohacking. So I'll put my legs up on the ladder and I'm doing, you know, almost an inverted push-up. And I mean, you get a huge pump from it, but there's something about the vascularization. But what I believe is really happening is you're getting the nerves in the muscles, basically the proprioceptors there, to sense what's happening. And because, you know, if you're doing a squat, your brain's like 30 times a second squat. So it does some neurological adaptation thing. And I think there's a lot we don't understand about it, but I do know I feel better and I lean out real quickly when I'm on it. So I'm a fan.
Yeah, I've heard you say that. I haven't been able to use it long enough to make any kind of conclusions, but I enjoyed using it.
All right,
it definitely makes your workouts intense.
Awesome. And by the way, I didn't know you've ever had one, and I'm not trying to sell my stuff here. Like, we didn't set any of this up ahead of time for people listening. I'm just curious. So, all right. We're coming up on the end of the interview, but I want to ask you about supplementation on top of food before we wind down. Whey protein, collagen, eggs. I don't know. Eggs aren't really supplementation. Vitamin C. Like, do you tell people to take anything like that?
Well, it depends on the person. Most of the time, I try to address everything with nutrition, and I start them there. But as we know, you know, even a paleo diet or a bulletproof diet, as the Caltons brought up with micronutrients and their vitamins, you know, we have to take a look at those things. And if we're deficient, is that causing some of our problems? So I would probably venture to guess that I am typical in what I supplement. Like, in other words, people that are paleo, that listen to your podcast, that listen to Chris Kresser, that listen to Rob Wolf.
DK2 Mag. Okay.
Exactly. Yep. So magnesium, K2, D3. I'm big on fermented cod liver oil, butter oil combination from Green Pasture. I mean, I think people sleep better on that. They get a little bit of fermented food in their diet as long as they're not bothered by histamines and those things. And they also get the K2 from the butter oil in there. So it's just a great food to add. And magnesium's big. Some people like to use the natural calm. Some people like to use the glycinate, the chelated glycinate, which works well. I don't really have a strong preference either way there, but I know most people need magnesium. And the whey protein is actually, it's always a challenge. We try to get quality grass-fed, and it usually comes down to yours. I'm trying to think of the other, the Warrior Whey, or I think SFH also has a grass-fed.
I haven't tried SFH's. Okay.
Stronger, faster, healthier or something. That might be the site. But I would say yours has the least reactivity from people that are sensitive to lactose or dairy.
Oh, thanks for letting me know about that. And for people listening, here's the deal with whey, mine or anyone else's. There's a huge variation in quality out there. But even mine, don't take too much whey. Like, I see like bodybuilders in particular who are kind of like, they hack their bodies, but they're not anti-aging and longevity or even inflammation focused as much as some other disciplines. But they have great knowledge, but they'll do like, you know, 8 scoops of whey a day, and that much methionine and cysteine is going to cause inflammation. That's why I'm like, whatever whey you get, take 2 tablespoons a day and then use other forms of protein that aren't going to cause as much inflammation, because excessive protein is not going to help you.
And I also use your collagen.
Oh, you do? Oh, thanks. Yeah. Wow. I totally didn't know if you'd ever tried any of my stuff when we got on the line. So that's awesome. And thank you for letting me know. Now, that's a great answer for supplementation. I love that. All right. Shortest route to optimal. So if you had to just kind of offer a little bit of advice for people about it, they want to optimize everything, given the things you know, what's the path for getting there? Working out more, eating more, like if you had someone had 2 weeks and they just need to get as optimal as they can get, the average person, what are the, like, what 4 or 5 things would you say to do?
Well, they have to make sure they're moving properly.
Okay. So start with movement. Okay.
So movement, I mean, as far as the fitness and the wellness aspect, moving well is super important. I mean, physiologically, lymphatic drainage, all that stuff, pain, function. I mean, it's super, super important. But that all has to sit on top of, I mean, if you're really talking about highest possible level, that has to sit on top of good sleep, managing your stress.
Move, sleep, stress. Okay.
Move, sleep, manage your stress, have awesome nutrition. Mm-hmm. But I usually define nutrition, you know, being like science, evidence-based, low inflammation, nutrient dense, low toxin, immune system boosting, executable, affordable, and sustainable.
There you go. All right? You're a pretty bulletproof there.
Yeah. I mean, that's basically what you preach. That's what Rob Wolf preaches. Yeah. I mean, that's what most of the paleo people are. You're trying to find
love the
that.
Paleo
but,
people, yeah.
You know, it's almost become a cliche in our circles, right? And everybody's like, oh, you're going to say that again? But all that stuff undoes any kind of physical progress that you're trying to make. If you don't, literally, you have a weak link in there, you're in trouble. And probably the one that Chris Kresser's brought to light, especially in his latest book, that I didn't really have an appreciation for is social connectivity. Like, I knew we're social creatures and that's important to us, but he's throwing out research in there that's basically suggesting that that's even, or at least as important to living long and healthy and avoiding sudden death as smoking 15 cigarettes a day.
From an anti-aging perspective, he's totally right there. There's a lot of personality variance there as well. You know, if you do the different typings, if some people really need less and some people, like, they're going to die if they don't get more. It's almost like a genetic thing, right? The same thing with I've been doing a lot of work with my clients, the ones who don't resolve quickly from inflammatory conditions on the Bulletproof diet. It's always one of those genetic things where you run your 23andMe, you go through Genetic Genie, and it's just personalized. Oh, for you, folic acid is kind of like kryptonite, and for you, it's fine. So those individual variations are important to understand, but like you said, those four or five things that you're talking about, it's the recipe. And if you only do three of the four, you're hosed, right?
Right.
So you got to get at least 80% of the way there on all five of them, because if you drop one of the balls, all the other balls don't go in either. I'm cool.
Totally with you.
I like your list. All right. Now, final question, one that you probably know is coming. Top three recommendations for people who want to kick more ass in all domains. So not just from your career, but just the wisdom you've learned in your life. Lay it down.
Okay. So I'm always been a science guy. I've always been anatomy, physiology, show me the evidence kind of thing. And I'm totally going to throw you off here, and I'm going to go a little more spiritual, emotional, behavioral.
Cool.
So I'm a big believer in that we have to be better about living in the moment. Like, we have to learn to enjoy the here and now, whether it's happiness, observation, learning, contemplation, adversity. Like, pain is not the exception. You know, it's a critical part of the story. So we're so preoccupied and busy that I don't think we're good at just taking in what's going on. Like, we have to be present more and not distracted. So I'm pretty big on that. And I'm not good at that. I tend to be all over the place. I've been working on my focus and just to appreciate that a little bit better.
We can hack that.
Yeah. I also believe that you need to make your relationships a priority. Like, you know, surround yourself with high energy, inspirational, positive people that are critical thinkers. They're mentors. You know, they don't bring you down. They compliment you. They make you better. Life's too short, you know, not to find those high energy people and those people you can learn from and interact with. And, you know, what's the saying? Winning's not the thing. Helping others win is the thing.
Yeah.
You know, so just really giving back. And then I guess that leads into showing gratitude. And I thought I was kind of unique, and you've had quite a few people say that on your podcast, I think. And what it was really cool to hear is that JJ brought some science to bear with that, right?
Yeah.
That there's actually some science that says being grateful, showing gratitude is really good for you. So I think we just have to realize how blessed we are and appreciate it and give back and, you know, have a servant's heart, make time for people, contribute, leverage your energy and knowledge and put it towards something good. So that's what I try to do, and it's helped me a lot. And it's kind of the older, wiser thing, right? When you're young, you're full speed and you're just all about the science and you're all about just doing what you need to do at the end of the day. And then you just take a deep breath and you go to sleep and you do it all over again. And then I think as you get older, you have children, life becomes a little more interesting and you just kind of take all that stuff in and you appreciate it a little bit more. And you realize that it's what you do with other people and your relationships and how you help other people that kind of makes you better.
Very well said, BJ. And speaking of gratitude, thanks for that. And thanks for being on the show.
Well, thank you. I'd be remiss if I didn't thank my buddy, Dave Jack, for putting us in touch. David Jack, he's a good friend of mine. And I know that you guys have spoken a couple times.
Yeah, we hooked up.
And I have to thank my wife, Laura, for this too, because truth be known, I wouldn't even know about you if it weren't for her. That's okay. Probably not true because we travel enough circles by now that I would have listened to your podcast or whatever. But true story, we were looking, trying to find a way to have coffee with some kind of cream because that's – I always drank it black before. And
yeah.
She needed something. And I'm like, you've got to cut the sugar and the cream out. And she found your Bulletproof coffee recipe. I read that. I read the backstory on it. And I thought, this guy's pretty cool. I want to see what he's all about. And the rest is history. So – I appreciate all you're doing for the industry and just making people more aware of performance and health. It makes people in the trenches like myself, it makes our job a lot easier when I can refer to a high quality podcast like yours. And it's nice that it's evidence-based. You provide references, you know, in a world today that's a lot of it's just anecdotal. So thanks for what you do, Dave.
You got it. For people listening, if you're grateful that you just heard this awesome interview with BJ, I would be grateful if you took a minute to go to bulletproofdietbook.com and drop your email address in there. You'll get a copy of the very latest Bulletproof Diet infographic. This one's completely redesigned. It's extremely professional. It looks better than before. You'll also get the first chapter of my book as soon as it's done being written. And the reason I'm asking you to do this today is because I'm showing publishers the interest levels in my book. And when you sign up for that, I can show that number to publishers who I'm speaking with now and say, look, this is a book with demand for it. So I really would appreciate it if you'd take a minute to do that, and you will get something that's really valuable in return. BJ, thanks again for being on the show. Everyone else, see you again in a few days.
Thanks, Dave.
If you haven't had a chance to learn about our new sleep induction mat, check it out on the website at upgradedself.com. It's a brand new bulletproof product that allows you to reach a deeper sleep more quickly by triggering an endorphin surge. You basically unroll the mat, lay down on it, and it forces your body to relax. Your sympathetic nervous system, your fight or flight response, freaks out. And when you tell it to calm down and you just keep laying on the mat, then your whole body just relaxes and you melt into it and it feels really good. And it helps me get to sleep faster and very specifically to get more deep sleep.
The Human Upgrade, formerly Bulletproof Radio, was created and is hosted by Dave Asprey. The information contained in this podcast is provided for informational purposes only and is not intended for the purposes of diagnosing, treating, curing, or preventing any disease. Before using any products referenced on the podcast, consult with your healthcare provider, carefully read all labels, and heed all directions and cautions that accompany the products. Information found or received through the podcast should not be used in place of a consultation or advice from a healthcare provider. If you suspect you have a medical problem or should you have any healthcare questions, please promptly call or see your healthcare provider. This podcast, including Dave Asprey and the producers, disclaim responsibility for any possible adverse effects from the use of information contained herein. Opinions of guests are their own, and this podcast does not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests. This podcast does not make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications or credibility. This podcast may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products or services. Individuals on this podcast may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to herein. This podcast is owned by Bulletproof Media.